Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now it's time to talk AI. I'm delighted to be joined by Richard Susskind. He's a leading thinker in the future of work, technology and professional services. He's the author of over 11 acclaimed books, his latest work being How to Think About AI, A Guide for the Perplexed. He's going to be here at the Pendulum Summit in Dublin on Friday the 23rd of January as one of the keynote speakers, and I'm delighted that he joins me now. Good morning to you, Richard. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Happy New Year, and I'm very much looking forward to your delivery at the Pendulum Summit. But firstly, can we talk, as somebody who's been, I suppose, close to this and watching technologies over 40-odd years, how do you think technology has changed in that time, and what rate is technology changing at now?
So as you say, sad to say, I've been involved with this technology since the early 80s, and I wrote my PhD on AI and law in Oxford from 83 to 86. So I spent much of my life thinking about this. And what I would say to you is we've seen more advance over the last 4 years in AI than we'd seen in the previous 40. And the defining moment was the launch of ChatGPT, which I think not only surprised many people working in AI, but stunned the general community. For the first time, we had at our fingertips a system that we could speak with, interact with as though with another human being, and that gave us access to all sorts of facilities and services and answers and so forth. And so that, for most of us, was the turning point.
Yeah. You include in your book Marvin Minsky's quote, and maybe I could read it to you because I think it's really powerful. Once the computers get control, we might never get it back. We would survive at their sufferance. If we're lucky, they might decide to keep us as pets. That scared the hell out of me, Richard.
Yeah, I say that quite near the beginning, right? In fact, in the first page. And I just after that made the observation that I used to think this was funny, but I'm not sure now. And I come to the view that saving humanity with and from AI is the defining challenge of our era. And by this, I mean that there are manifest benefits that AI can bring and a mountain range of threats too. I want to urge listeners not to regard AI as a football team. You don't need to support it or not support it. I think one can be both optimistic and pessimistic, recognizing its great potential, for example, to solve the global health crisis, the global educational crisis, global access to justice crisis. It'll contribute, I think, to solving the climate crisis too, but at the same time, it presents all sorts of threats, not least to, for example, the white-collar labor force. It presents threats of the systems being used by bad actors for all manner of nefarious purposes. And of course, we will come to rely on these systems, and often these systems, certainly today, make mistakes. They aren't entirely reliable. So we have this remarkable, powerful technology that shows great promise on the one hand and actually puts all sorts of fears into us on the other.
And are we at the foothills of development, as you say in the book? In other words, you know, we don't know what's to come, but where are we on the journey?
I think it is early days. I know people who are new to the field, in some sense, feel that AI has arrived and we have it and we can move on to something else now. But I think this, we will regard what we're doing just now in just a few years' time as fairly primitive. There are various views on the future of AI. The AI community doesn't speak with a single voice. Some people think it's all hype. Others think that what we're seeing today are powerful systems that will become more reliable, but that'll be the end of or the limits of AI. Others go further and look for something called AGI, Artificial General Intelligence. And this is the idea that these systems could match the full range of cognitive tasks that humans undertake. In the broadest of terms, these systems will be as smart and capable as us. Others go further and talk about superintelligence, the idea that these systems might be unfathomably more capable than us. But none of us can be confident which of these futures is going to unfold. And this is what I talk about a lot in my book, that I think we at least need to plan for artificial general intelligence. And one of the great difficulties here, both our political leaders and our business leaders, is that people are very reluctant to look beyond the next couple of years. So the technologies we have today clearly are bringing efficiency and productivity benefits. Most employers are already seeing this, but few people are prepared to take a step further and think, well, what does this mean for our workforce in the 30s? What does this mean for the future of defense? How will this affect the way we receive health services, not in the next 2 years, but in 10 years? And so it strikes at the heart of our inclination as humans to be short-term thinkers, understandably, to make the most of what we have at our fingertips. But what we need now is a public conversation about its long-term impact and some serious long-term strategic planning.
You also mentioned singularity, and that's when technological growth becomes uncontrollable and irreversible, and is scheduled to happen anytime between now and 2050. Can you just talk to me more about that?
I held back for the purpose of this conversation. I mentioned four hypotheses. Yes, there are two further ones. One's the singularity hypothesis, and the next is the sixth is the AI evolution hypothesis. Quite early in the day, I thought, to introduce such cataclysmic notions. The singularity, at least as I define it, is where there's essentially a merger of humans and AI systems. And we've already had a sense of that through our science fiction, but the idea that there might be chips embodied in us or embedded in our brains that might, in one way or another, increase our consciousness, vastly increase our intellectual capabilities. Now, listeners may think, well, this is just nonsense. But if you think of the iPhones that most of us use, this already gives us massive external storage. If you look at the field of brain-computer interface, which is devoted to looking at ways that we can improve the way that machines and humans can communicate directly with one another, you begin to see that this possible future is not entirely bizarre. And some people call it transhumanism, and many people will say this is something we should avoid. There's something uniquely important about humanity and humans, and we should be, to some extent, disconnected from these machines. I should therefore mention the sixth and final hypothesis, the AI evolution hypothesis. And this is the idea, well, you can look at it in cosmic terms, that our universe is about 13, our known universe, about 13.8 billion years old. Humanity, a few hundred thousand years old, just a blink of the eye in cosmic terms. And people who believe in the AI evolution hypothesis, as I call it, will say that it may well be that the only contribution that humanity makes to the cosmos is to develop these far greater intelligences that in due course replace us. I'm sorry to spoil your morning, but that's one thesis. I'm not here to defend that, but what I am here to do in my book is to lay out these various hypotheses, these ideas. Is it hype? Will what we have today just become a bit better but go no further? Will these systems match our performance? Will they greatly exceed our performance? Will we merge with them? Will we be replaced with them? They're the six different options that I discuss. As I say, it's not for me to stipulate or in some sense insist that one future is more desirable or more likely than the other. In writing my book, How to Think About AI, I just want people to at least understand the options.
Can I ask you then, Richard, should we be, I suppose, wary about who's peddling AI? If you look, and again, you touch on this in the book, who's selling it? You talk about digital line tamers, wide-eyed CEOs peddling marketing plans built on existential fear. So just talk to me a little bit about the messengers of AI.
I think there's a prior issue, which is, and it might be the same one, which is who owns this AI. The reality is that we are allowing, or what's coming about, is an unprecedented concentration of power, of capital, of data, of processing capabilities in a relatively, or actually a very small number, of profit-seeking corporations, most of whom are more powerful than most nation states already. And the extent to which, however, these organizations are subject to the international legal regime is deeply questionable. So you have often marvelously charismatic, impressive, driven individuals who are forging ahead with this technology, who are, and it's completely understandable given their perspective, far more concerned about profit and turnover than they are about the social and economic impact. Now, what worries me, however, is that these individuals also seem to be dominating the public conversations. So when one hears around the world about presentations, for example, or discussions in front of Congress or parliaments, it's often these self-same technology leaders that are actually guiding the conversation. Now, while I accept they are remarkable entrepreneurs and often phenomenal technologists, they aren't deeply experienced in regulation, in legislation, in policymaking, in thinking through the ethical impact of their technology. Now, I think we need to widen the involvement of people within this debate. This cannot simply be debate amongst technologists, remarkable though they may be. And so I call for business leaders, I call for government leaders, I call for many clear thinkers to be engaged and involved in this discussion about what is the most consequential technology of our time.
Yeah, and I think, as you say, that it's I suppose, too much power in the hands of too few, is it not?
I think that's right. And one of the most profound difficulties here is the wealth creation. If, as many of us think, there will be less employment in years to come because much of the work that humans do will be undertaken by machines, that economic value will come less from human labor and more from machines, systems, intellectual property, in a sense, we can envisage a hollowing out so that there's phenomenal wealth at one end of the market and considerable poverty at the other, unless there's a major redistribution exercise. So how it is that the wealth of these phenomenally successful corporations might be evenly spread and shared, it seems to me that's one of the greatest political challenges we have as humanity ever faced. And we haven't thought through the implications of this for social and economic harmony. We are potentially leading ourselves into a time of great unrest where there is great wealth, but that's shared with amongst a very small number. So I don't want to be entirely negative because, I stress to you that this technology can and will be used for great good, whether it be in health or law, or education or elsewhere. But this balancing the benefits and the threats of AI seems to me to be such a fundamental policy issue. There's no point in just thinking about this over the next couple of years. We need some long-term thinking. And that's why I really come to the conclusion in the book that the fundamental question we should be asking ourselves as leaders, as parents, as educationalists, as journalists, as whoever, is what if AGI? It seems to me that that is a reasonable question to ask. What if we develop systems that can perform at the level of humans? What will that mean for the future of humans, for the future of society and community? And I don't want to wait for AGI to come about to have that discussion. Now, many people say, well, hang on a second, this is all science fictional. But I think if you ask most people in the AI development community, and particularly these tech companies, they're expecting or aiming to develop AGI within the next 5 to 10 years. So that gives you a sense of the timescales that at least the expert technologists think we're facing. Now, I also think we should distinguish between the advance of technology and the adoption of technology. Even if the technology has emerged for regulatory reasons, for commercial reasons, for cultural reasons, we don't always embrace new technologies. But we did see with ChatGPT, just as one illustration, within a couple of months, it had 100 million users. This is unprecedented. And as these systems become increasingly capable as they are, as they're found useful in all aspects of our lives, it seems to me unlikely we're going to see a dip off. And we're investing more in technology, on this AI technology, than we have in any single technology in history. So this is a fascinating time, a scary time, an exciting time. And I urge everyone to engage in the discussion. One of the main themes of my book is, let's not talk too much about the technicalities here, about how the systems actually work. Let's focus more on their likely impact.
Listen, it's fascinating to talk to you this morning, Richard, and we look forward to welcoming you to Dublin for the Pendulum Summit on Friday the 29th of January. Richard Susskind, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks very much.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.